This is the November 19 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. A little different program today as I spoke with just two panelists, Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing and Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading, and talked to them each individually on different subjects. We'll start with Jim Bauer. Jim Bauer, I'd like to talk a little bit about inflation in the marketplace. It's something that farmers, brokers, traders, the media have been talking about a great deal over the last several weeks as it relates to the energy markets, the commodity markets, and I'm wondering if you have an opinion about the current situation and what inflation, if that's what you think is happening, might have on the marketplace.
Well, it's a complicated subject now, especially in the environment that we're currently in, and I project that we will be in for several years. Personally, I think we're in a pattern, I guess a broad pattern of stagflation. In other words, prices are going higher, demand is sometimes going higher with it, but in other times when the market gets too high, you phase out some of the buyers. But in general, I think for the price of goods is obviously by the price for a turkey dinner at Thanksgiving, everything has the tendency to go up over time. That's why the index funds are so powerful. They have huge sources of income, and they've got a lot of money sitting on the sidelines waiting to look for opportunities. And I think that's a bigger factor than most people realize, or most farm ranch people, you know, aren't totally aware of. But the markets are heavily influenced, in my opinion, by the index funds, because they have so much money and they have so much power to move a market, so you have to learn how to test that and take advantage of it when the opportunities present themselves. So it can be a very good thing for the producer long term.
So can you define stagflation and maybe give me a brief look back on when stagflation took place and what you mean?
Well,
I'm
not an economist, but in general, Todd, I think it basically boils down to that no matter what the price is, the demand is probably going to be met through price structure. So you can have a climbing market like we had back in the 80s, we had a climbing market on a daily basis, but you had to be careful because they could change course relatively quickly on you and jump out and then jump right back in after you get blown out. So it's not quite that situation now, but you've got relatively strong demand for commodities picking up worldwide, including just about all sectors. But on the other hand, you've got to be careful with it because there is a different element of trade, and again, that's your index funds who can flip that market so fast, so quick, you can get taken out before you even know it.
So what is your fundamental view of the marketplace for corn then at this time?
I think the corn market probably has to stay elevated in order to bring those acres back in. As you know, it's a well-advertised problem, the fertilizer, insecticide, pesticide, herbicide, cash rent, those prices are going up, so I don't see a total washout. On the other hand, we will have to watch South America short-term, especially Argentina short-term, to make sure that those crops there don't get behind and don't get off to a bad start, because if they do, they'll have to be short covering from a global standpoint, and that would take the nearby corn prices higher quickly if that element stays around.
You often point to macroeconomics when you're discussing the marketplace. What things have you been watching very closely?
Well, you know, I've been in the business a long time, as you know, and I've seen all these changes in the structure of the way we do business and the way the farm ranch people have to get on top of it before it gets away from them. But I think from a personal standpoint, we're advising people to be relatively aggressive in getting things priced out, and then if they need to make adjustment to that, they can come back to the board and buy it back on the board. But I'm a big, big fan of on-farm storage, and this is the type of market where if we pay attention, do our homework, work at it every day, there will be some pretty good opportunities to surface, because it hasn't been that long ago when we were talking $6 and $7 beans, not $12 to $14.
Are you pricing out both the 2021 crop, and you can tell me how far along you are on that one, and then 2022 as well?
We've pretty much priced out the 2021 crop. That's pretty much already taking place. We're starting the process of the 22-23 crop. Well, actually, we started kind of the last several days. But go slow. I am watching South America very closely, particularly Argentina. We have to watch the price of crude oil because obviously there's a linkage between crude oil and ethanol, and that's an ongoing situation too there. But I don't think you should be panicky. I think that you got to sit down and be careful with what you say or do as far as your situation to your bankers, your economists that are helping you, your advisors. You got to work together on it because the markets are much more complicated than they were just 5 or 10 years ago.
How and why?
Well, I keep going back to this situation with the funds. We didn't have them in the marketplace like back in the 80s and 90s like we do today. But you can see the impact that they've had on this market here just regionally the last several months, particularly the time frame back when we were pricing out the current rally that we pretty much held on to most of it, but not all of it. But we have finished pretty much marketing the 2020-21 crop. Now we're working on 22-23.
How's the black boxes of the algorithmic trade from managed money changed what you do?
Well, I'm battle scarred, but I've been saying I watch a lot of football. I love sports, and I participated in my whole life. And now these sporting teams, these professional teams, if you look, their coach is making the decision from a computer what the next play is going to be, who's the next substitution is going to be, you know, how long we should stay with this type of running game. All those questions are answered by a computer, basically controlled by probably a couple of assistant coaches up in the press box watching what's going on. So when you equate that over to the commodity market, it's kind of the same thing. We got our coaches and brokers sitting on elevated space to watch the game. Be ready to make the decision quickly. You might have to change your game plan during the course of the market structure. And the same in the commodities. You got to be set up to make some changes relatively fast based upon what those algorithms are saying. And I'm at my level, I'm not going to use them like a person straight out of Purdue or the University of Nebraska. They're going to learn about the algorithms. They're going to learn about how to go up against the funds, or they'll start their own funds. I don't know that that's the easiest way to trade or make decisions, but personally, I think you still got to go back to the individual situation. And unfortunately, you got to be able to market your crop on a local, regional basis, but it's still a world market, and the world market is what counts. As you know, I've tried promoting that global analysis for decades. I've worked on that, and it's something that, unfortunately, a lot of the producers and end users, you know, hesitate because they're not used to it or something different. But again, everything is global today. Travel, entertainment, products. And you see the impact. Well, I'm a Kings Point graduate of the United States Merchant Marine, and I sailed in the Merchant Marine, and I sailed on container ships. And I've watched in 60 Minutes the other night, and they had a whole program about all the backup that we're seeing by the shipping industry, some of them as much as 45 days, well, before they can get back into the unload part and then get a cargo picked back up to go back the other way. So that's an element that's got to be watched too. It's not just the fact that the product is there. You've got to be able to move it to the correct source at the correct price. So that's not just a local or regional. That has global impact.
On that global front, how has the introduction of Brazil as an exporter of both corn and soybeans in a really big way on the market changed what you've had to do, and how do you incorporate them? And then, for instance, Ukraine, parts of Russia, for corn and wheat both.
Well, if I had a son that wanted to be a commodity broker the first thing, or a daughter, and they wanted to stay in it for the career, the first thing I would tell them is when you get your opportunity, get in the airplane and get to South America and spend a couple of months there just learning what goes on there from a production standpoint and in a shipping standpoint. It's complicated, but it's growing. As you know, the growth rate there is just incredible. I don't see how you can be a great broker or a great advisor unless you really understand what goes on daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, decade-wise, in what's happening in Brazil and Argentina particularly. and now you could actually include Paraguay, Uruguay, Bolivia in that too. You just got to understand how that market works. You've got to follow it from a weather standpoint, from a production standpoint, because they are tremendous producers, and they have relatively lower costs compared to what we have today. But you've known me for a long time. I was advising people as hard as I could to get them to get that on-farm storage situation so that you could compete better than or as good as the South American producer on a daily basis, because they don't have the on-farm storage like we do. That's one thing that we've beaten them at that. They may have an opportunity from an infrastructure and a river system. It probably is as good, if not better, than ours, so we're going to have to improve on that. But certainly, by having that on-farm storage in place, backed up with the product that you produced, it puts you in a position to take advantage of when you get those opportunities that will come along. All markets have opportunity.
You mentioned early on that producers need to make sure they understand their local marketplace and the basis levels that are in play at different end users, whether that be an ethanol plant, a livestock facility, different local elevators and end users. How do they keep track of it all, and what are the key indicators for them in those basis plays?
Well, I like to kiss Siri, you know, keep it simple. Let's not get too complicated with this whole basis situation, although it's very important that you understand it and that you're paying attention. I've always recommended, you know, keeping a chart on the refrigerator door, the basis levels where you're at, and which ones offer the most opportunity at certain times. They're very seasonal. So from a seasonal standpoint, if you can kind of master that awareness and you've got that on-farm storage, you can work that pretty good. And most of my customers are relatively knowledgeable in that, and they play that basis thing pretty strong.
Anything else before I let you go, Jim?
Well, I guess all these years that I've been doing this, I've seen all these changes. Again, I'm going to go back to that situation. If you really want to be in this business, and that includes farming and ranching, and you get the opportunity to travel to China, to Russia, to Brazil, to try to get to those places that you can have almost a visual representation of what goes on a daily basis, you know, in the world of commodity trading and commodity pricing. Not an easy thing to do, but personally, I wouldn't trade with a broker unless they had some degree of knowledge or experience in the Southern Hemisphere as far as awareness. You just got to understand that they're tremendous competitors from a production standpoint, and they're still going to get bigger in the years to come. But that doesn't mean we can't compete in it. The first thing, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Todd, you've got to learn these algorithm trades, kind of watch how they do that in sports, and kind of interchange it with what we do in the commodity market. It's kind of a game plan. Travel as much as you can, and try to lead an example by being aware every day that you're trying to find the best prices possible and not try to hit the home run.
It's Jim Bauer. He's with Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joined us for our Commodity Week program. A little different this week, as I contacted individuals and talked to them about particular topics. I wanted to know from Jackie Vakes at TotalFarmMarketing.com about marketing plans, because I know she sits down with producers, like most of the brokers that we have on the air with us, and talks to them about putting together those plans, and we had that discussion. I'd like to talk just a little bit about marketing plans, because I think that's a subject that maybe we don't take up as often as we should on Commodity Week, and what producers ought to think about over time. And I guess what put this in the back of my mind was these really high prices, really good crops for the most part, for corn and soybeans across much of the Midwest. Producers may be thinking, hey, we've got a bullish scenario. And I just, in general, thinking about a marketing plan and when to use it and when to change it, mm-hmm. for instance. So when you sit first down with a client, what do you want to learn from them? And then I'm going to start kind of picking away at how you put a marketing plan together for them.
Okay. Well, you know, when you first sit down with someone, Todd, what you really need to know is kind of what their habits are, you know, because everything is so dependent on where they sell to, you know, where they live, what the demand is in that particular area. Do they have a lot of ethanol demand? Do they have a lot of cattle demand? And so you need to find out all of those basics, and you need to find out basically what they're comfortable with. Are you comfortable with selling ahead on 50% of your crop? And then re-owning 50% of your crop, you know, using calls, and then sitting back and waiting to put puts on 50% of your crop, that's not a bad way to go. It's been something that's worked really well over the years. But, you know, you have to have a person who's willing to execute. It's not, you know, you can have a marketing plan, and I truly believe that the majority of farmers have a marketing plan. Unfortunately, it's in their head. And then when the price goes higher than what they expected it to, it doesn't get executed. You know, and then we sit back and now we have that fear. What's going to happen? And so if you can put yourself in a position where you have something that more or less gives you an opportunity to be able to make somewhat of an automated move, and that's what a marketing plan does for you. It says, all right, I have goals. I know that I'm making money at this level. So if this is the worst sale that I've made for the year, this isn't bad. I can live with this. And knowing the goals and knowing what the value of your crop is, to me, that's the bottom line right there. I talk to way too many people who basically say, well, you know, I made a sale at $5. Okay, but what's your average price for your crop? Well, I made a sale at $5. Well, that's not the average price for your crop, because you have to look at where the current market is as well as what you've already sold. And so the first step is to basically sit back and say, all right, I need to be realistic about this, because so many times what happens in marketing plans is people find themselves caught in this emotional struggle. Oh my goodness, I need to hang on for another 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 cents or 15 cents, where if they actually looked at what their average price was, they maybe only have to have one penny. But if you don't know it, you're not going to do it. So I know it's easy to put the paperwork in the background sometimes, you know, and say, oh, you know, that's all office stuff and everything else. And it's nice to be able to just make a sale, put the paper down, and walk away from it. But you really have to take the time to look at what that average price is, because what that really does for you is it takes away your emotion. And emotion is emotion, fear, and greed are the biggest things that hurt us from a marketing standpoint. And so it's a matter of finding out what a person is like, what they're willing to do. But you have to have a plan. And the best thing to do is write it down on paper, not just have it in your head, because I can tell you, and you and I have gone to enough meetings where I've said to the guys, well, how many of you are going to sell at $4? And now we're at $4.25. Well, how many of you sold at $4? And you don't see any hands go up because they were afraid that it was going to go to 425. But had it gone back to 370, they'd have still been sitting there and not made a sale. So, you know, it's a discipline is what it is. It's something that isn't easy. Risk management is difficult. But what you're really working to do is you're working to minimize your losses and maximize your profit. And so maybe sometimes you're going to have to sell at a price that you think is not the best price, but you don't know what tomorrow brings. We live in a world market.
You know, I can tell you personally that I'm good at writing them down. I'm good at putting them in the spreadsheet. I'm good at knowing what my current sold average price is. It's all there. It just drops in. You put the sale in, and it takes, you know, 2 minutes to drop it into the spreadsheet, and it's all calculated. However, what I've not been able to be very good at is knowing what my costs are until after the fact. And I bet that's a big problem for a lot of producers.
Oh, that is a gigantic problem for a lot of producers. And, you know, that is another key part to the entire plan. Because if you don't know what your costs are, how do you know where you're profitable? You really don't. I can give you an example. I worked with I still work with them, but a very, very, very large farm. And when I first started to work with him, I said to him, would you please send me your information, you know, so I can put this all together and see what's where I'm at. And so he sent me all of his contracts where he had sold and how much inventory he had and everything else. And I said, well, what are your costs? Well, I didn't sit down and figure that out. Well, I said, please do, because we can't tell whether we're profitable or not unless we know what our costs are, you know. And so that's one of those uncomfortable things, I think, when you come right down to it. And, you know, that brings us right into today. When you look at what's going on with fertilizer, you look at what's going on with pesticides, you look at all of those things, we can't hide under a rock and make believe that it's not happening, because it is. And, you know, with South America being 6 months behind us on planting, and they're already having a hissy fit, I think we cannot sit on our hands and do nothing. You've got to be out there and be very diligent and be in front of this rather than behind it. And even if it looks like a horrid price, pencil it out. What's it going to take to be able to do it? You know, in a worst case scenario, and none of us want this, if we can break even, we live to work another year. But if we can't, that's a very difficult thing. Many, many years ago, I worked with a fellow from, he's passed away now, from out on the East Coast, and I wanted him to do some marketing. And he had been a tobacco farmer and went to corn and beans when the whole tobacco thing blew up. And he said, oh, Jackie, I don't need to do that. I make so much money. I really don't need to do that. I'm worth so much. And the next year, he lost $400,000. Believe me, after that, he did options or futures every single year. And I have another guy on the East Coast said, never had crop insurance, don't believe in crop insurance. Nobody ever had it. 1 year, they had a total failure. He has crop insurance now. We can't let ourselves get into that position, where it puts our entire livelihood and all the work we've put into this at risk. And that's really what it's all about.
You know, on the input side, on the cost side, filling out the Schedule F every year on your taxes does a pretty good job of giving you what the costs are, and it's a matter of making sure that you put those in earlier rather than later.
Yes.
But just like with the sales, if you don't put them in a spreadsheet, if you don't put them someplace where they're calculating total cost on a per acre basis, mm-hmm. in a different way, actually, than what you're seeing, you know, the per bushel basis, yeah. or per acre basis, or what the total input is and what your total profit is, it's really difficult to get a handle on how much you're making. And then the whole 2 years of sales kind of thing, yeah, becomes also very difficult. The Schedule F will help you straighten some of that out too, partially, but that's a tax year, not a season. And so the crop year becomes a difficult issue. Just things that I guess I've gained insight on over the last 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult for a farmer to keep track of it all, or to think about keeping track of it all, because, you know, they're a scientist in the field, they're a laborer, they have to be a financier, a banker, they have to be all of these things, the entrepreneur rolled into one, and they'll be good at some of them, but trying to offload them to other people might not be that easy because of the independent streak they have as well.
Well, you hit it right there. I mean, you know, as farmers, we tend to want to take control of everything. And there are some things we like much better than others. And 9 times out of 10, paperwork isn't one of them. And so we like to do things with our hands. We like to be physically involved. And so it is really important to be able to hand it off. And, you know, I think farmers are so hard on themselves. They see the market doing a certain thing, and they're beating themselves, and they're beating themselves. Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? And how many times haven't we found ourselves in personal situations where we thought the world was coming to an end, and then found out it wasn't nearly as bad as what we thought it was going to be, only because we figured out what it took to be able to figure that out. And that's what a marketing plan does. It helps you be able to take the emotion, set it to the side, and say, okay, maybe I messed up and I didn't make a sale when I should have made a sale, but it's not going to be the end of me. And I don't, you know, I have a story from when my dad was, when I was in the feed mill. My dad came in and he was really down in the dumps. And I said, Dad, what's wrong? And he said, well, I lost $16,000 today. I said, what? I said, Daddy, what did you do? He said, I sold my corn too early. And I said, well, did you make a profit? Well, yeah. Well, I said, then how did you lose $16,000? He said, well, if I wouldn't have sold it till today, I'd have made $16,000 more. And I said, that's the thing that really has motivated me to do what I do, because I saw how it impacted him. and how terrible he felt about himself, and yet he had made a profit. So what we really have to do is try and disengage from that sale that we made, forget that sale that we made. I remember when we hit that high way back, what was it, 589 was the all-time high, and everybody you talked to, yep, I sold at 589, I sold at 589. Yeah, but do you know what the basis was when it was at 589? I was in Minnesota doing a thing, and I'll never forget it, because I asked them that, and they said, no. I said, well, I figured it out. It was $1.30 under. So a guy who sold for 59 made as much as you did waiting for 589, and he didn't have the risk that you had. That's the thing we have to look at. So you know that the components are the basis, what's going on in your cash market, and your personal feelings, and what, you know, find somebody you trust. That's the name of the game. Work with someone who will ask you questions. And those uncomfortable questions sometimes, you know, and all they really are there for is to make you think. That's really what a marketing plan does. It makes you stop and take a good look at what you're doing and say, maybe if I change this, it would make that much difference.
Do you have some simple marketing plan rules that you follow? For instance, I'll use an easy one. I use... the USDA's season's average cash price as a guidepost. And that guidepost moves every month, but at least I have a guidepost by which I can compare my own sales year in and year out. And sometimes I'm ahead, and most of the time I hopefully am ahead, but sometimes I'm behind as well. And that's a guidepost I use. But do you have simple kinds of rules of thumb that you use for a marketing plan?
Well, I like to use the USDA all cash marketing number, but I think that the some of the things that I try to talk to people about is being very much in touch with what's going on with their basis in the local community, you know, and that probably is number one in my mind, okay? Because, you know, basis is a teller about everything. If basis is improving and the markets are improving, you know that demand is good in your area, but that doesn't mean it's going to stay there. So you have to stay on top of it, because sometimes it's only because they need to fill an order, and then the basis falls back again. So basis, to me, cash is still king, no matter how you look at it. Futures and options are awesome. Cash is still king. And so from that perspective, what I like to do is seasonally, I like to start now in December and look at potentially buying calls, because we normally have a lower volatility at this time of year. You know, buy calls through March on 50% of the crop, not make any sales, just buy the calls. And then when we get into that March to June time frame, if you look at it seasonally, now granted this year might be different, but if you look at it seasonally, you can sell 50% of your crop because you already re-owned 50% at a lower number, and then put puts in the other 50. And you can sit back and just do nothing. I mean, you know, and say, okay, let the market tell me what it wants to do. If it goes higher than where your puts are, yay, that's great. You know, if it goes higher than where your cash sales were, yay, you've got calls in place. I mean, it takes away that terrible angst of having to say, oh my gosh, and you do it incrementally. You don't do everything at one time. You spread it out over that period of time. And it's worked well for us for a long time, and I continue to do that. It's hard to get guys to do it sometimes. In fact, what I try to do is get people to commit to doing it, saying, okay, I give you this direction, that you will sell this many bushels or buy this many calls over this period of time, buy this many puts over this period of time, and then they have the requirement to sell that many bushels over that period of time. It's a relatively simple thing to do. But if you look at it historically, it's been very, very good. And so I think the key is know yourself, know your market and who you're working with. I can tell you right now, there are guys in the West that are just getting phenomenal prices for corn that's going down to Kansas because they know their market. They know who to talk to. You know your market better than we do. You're still the number one person. It's not an easy job. It's not something that anybody loves to do, but it's something that has to be done.
Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. She joined us on this November 19 edition of Commodity Week, along with our special guest, Jim Bauer of Bauer Trading out of Lafayette, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.